Tonight on Uncensored Radio, Australian recording artist and TV personality Katie Underwood joins us to discuss instant fame, reality TV, pop stars, Argo, and healing through music. Katie's giving us all the inside scoop, so stay tuned.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen out there in UCR land, we are super excited. Today we have a very special guest. She is a legend in Australian pop dance music, Miss Katie Underwood. How are you today? Welcome.
I'm very well. I'm very well.
So we were just talking briefly before the show started about how everyone's surviving COVID. So you're in lockdown. You're in Melbourne?
I am in Melbourne. No, we just had like a micro lockdown. So they're coming up with new lingo for lockdowns all the time. So now they call the 5-day lockdown is a circuit breaker. So we just had that. We didn't break. So now we're sort of free again. But, you know, back to the default of wearing masks everywhere and all of that. But I think across Victoria, we all agree we'd rather wear masks and be free to roam around than be locked down in our houses for various reasons. So, yeah, look, I think it's going to be a lot of to and fro and lockdown and lock and back out until the vaccine sort of rolls out, you know, through the rest of the year.
One of our colleagues, Vera's, had her vaccinations. So she said like it was fine. The second one that she had, she got some nausea and a headache because, you know, you get the two shots. But she said it was fine. Like there was no, you know, she didn't turn into a zombie, which is nice. Look,
I mean, people have, you know, some people have real reservations about it and they're like, oh, I don't want to be a guinea pig and this and that. And I understand that. But for me, I'm happy to kind of jump in and do it. You know, I'm healthy, I'm young. There's no reason why I should have any weird, side effects. And I probably won't make my children get it just yet. They're only 9, so I don't think they are really, you know, high risk. But well, I figure, you know what, I'll take one for the team.
And look, been through more drama in your life, Katie, haven't you, than a COVID vaccine?
Like there's a walk in the park. Like honestly, I'd take 5 of those over some of the shit I've done in my life. So yeah, I am not worried at all.
So we're gonna jump straight in. I kind of went a bit overboard, I think, in a bit of research about you. I feel like I know a lot about you. So
okay,
you might go like this. But hopefully.
I love research. It's good.
The one thing I want to say is that Katie Underwood, you are probably what I like to call a very arsy bitch. You got straight
into
it. Yeah. I don't know how much the boys know about the very start of your career. So can we take you way, 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 way back in the Wayback Machine?
Take us back.
To 1999 and how you got Terra Firma track. So do you want to share that story? Because it's crazy.
Yeah. So look, I'll take you way back. Back in the dark ages, I was a reckless recreational drug user and club goer, and I used to enjoy going out clubbing, and then we'd kick back at someone's place, have a recovery party, and I would often improvise over dance tracks at my friends' places just because, you know, I've always enjoyed singing and that's kind of what I did. Anyway, I remember there was this one day. So, you know, often people would be partying and doing whatever and I would just like plant myself in front of the stereo and just, you know, close my eyes and just sing whatever. So there's this one day and I'd sat down in front of the stereo. Everyone was outside and so I was just inside by myself doing my own thing. Anyway, about, I don't know how many minutes later, 15 minutes maybe, I opened my eyes back up and there was like 20 people in the lounge room watching me going, what the fuck is this woman doing? You're amazing. You need to do stuff. Anyway, so then there was this one song called Floating by Terra Firma that was released as an instrumental trance track in 98. And that was the one I was kind of into at the time. So a friend of mine, DJ Martine, said, you know what, you should just like record your vocals, record whatever song over it, send it over to him. And I'm like, why would I do that? Like, who am I? I'm nobody. I'm just some chick from Adelaide. You know, what's that going to do? She goes, you know what, it's not going to hurt. Just do it. What do you got to lose? I'm like, yep, fair point. So that's exactly what I did. I just, I went into this studio in South Melbourne and, yeah, just recorded whatever, kind of edited up and sent it across. About 6 months later, I heard back, no, maybe it was 3 months, I heard back from Terra Firma's manager and he's like, we've just got your CD. I've sent it to Claudio. He really loves it. He's in Miami at the moment. But we'll get back to you and he's really digging it. So this is, I don't even know this, now this part of the story you may not have been able to research because this, I don't even know if I've been mentioned
this before. Gosh, I love it.
Yeah. So it was really kind of fortuitous and synchronicity. So then Claudio, who's basically the Terra Firma, you know, that's his act name. So he's gotten back in touch with me and not only did he enjoy what I'd done, he'd seen a psychic like super recently who'd said, you're about to meet someone who's going to blow the roof off your music and going to take you in a really new direction. So he'd never worked with a vocalist before. So he's had this psychic reading, kind of sat on it for a bit, as you do, and then suddenly, boom, I appear out of nowhere. So he's gone, I think we need to, you know, do something. So about 6 months later, I flew over to the UK. He was working on his solo album, Terra Firma, The Adventures Of, and he'd recorded most of it. And he said, you know, let's lay this down fresh. And so we did that. And then he was just super blown away. He's like, wow, you've got an amazing voice. You know, I really love what you're doing. Do you want to do some more stuff on the album? So I ended up recording on 4 of the tracks on his album release. And a couple of them were just like little sound effect-y type of things, like not much. But they ended up getting licensed on like Gatecrasher albums. I don't know if you know trance music, if you're of my vintage.
Back in the day.
So that was like, it was quite a win, you know, getting on a Gatecrasher is like getting on a Ministry of Sound or one of those massive, you know, international labels. So yeah, so that whole experience was like super validating for me. I felt really acknowledged and seen as a singer and a writer and a creative person, you know, from someone who'd been doing it, you know, well ahead of me. I was 24 at the time.
And so, it's, you know, just that, because you took that chance too. You're like, oh, well, whatever.
And you're like, why would I do it?
And flew halfway around the world to, you know, rock into this guy's studio that I'd never met before and spend a week recording with him. So was just was really incredible, and that was kind of what started it. So yeah, that's the backstory for the Terra Firma journey.
It's just crazy. I just think you don't hear those stories anymore. Like, that used to be the way that you got discovered.
Yeah,
before reality TV. Hello. But yeah, that whole narrative of you were the good choir girl that went and did dance music and pop music, that seems very popular. But you've also did some swing and jazz with Corduroy Lounge around that time as well?
Correct, yeah. So around the same time, so I did the Terra Firma journey and I was feeling really good and I'd always wanted to do jazz as well. So at that point in my life, my intention musically was to make a jazz album and pursue dance music. They were my two kind of genre streams that I really wanted to, which is kind of how it all fell out. But the jazz album took me another 10 years to make. But, yeah, I started gigging with this guy called Charlie Rook, who was famous for being in a band called The Sharp, and more famous because The Sharp always wore black skivvies, which was a look in the 90s. So that was there.
Yeah, kind of like the anti-Wiggles.
Oh, my God, they wore it so hard, but it worked. Like I remember going to a gig to see them in Adelaide in summer. It must have been 40 degrees inside this hall they were playing and they were still wearing those fucking skivvies. And it was like, man, I do not even understand what is going on for you guys, but I respect your decision to like hold the brand. It was crazy. Anyway, so Charlie was really great. He got introduced to me through a friend and he was looking for a new singer to front his band, to front a jazz outfit that he wanted to create. But he said, you know what, I'm so over jazz singers because you're all like so much, like too much feeling jazz.
Yep.
He said, yeah, but feeling it in a really wanky way. So yeah. He said, I want someone to come at this music fresh. And I had no experience in singing jazz or really even listening to jazz, but I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So we spent 6 months together. He was my first musical mentor. And every Tuesday afternoon, I would go around his place with a bottle of white wine and 3 hours to spare. And we would drink and learn songs and sing, and he'd play guitar. And it was a really, really amazing part of my life. So we built that up. And then at the end of that, we started to book gigs. You know, he's like, yep, I think you're ready. We've got about 50 songs. You know what you're doing, you know, it's time to kind of hit the ground running. So we started getting gigs, and as a band, ideally what you want is you want to get a residency, which is a regular gig once a week, you know, at a place or a couple of venues, and kind of rotate through that. Like, that's kind of what you aim for as a band. So we were starting to get that. We got a residency at a great hotel in Richmond. It's like, yeah, okay, this is really cool. Anyway. Then I went and did this thing, which was auditioning for this pop group. And I said,
that'll never work out. What are you talking about?
It'll never work. I don't even like pop. I'm like, I auditioned for this band on the weekend, and I've made it through to Sydney audition. So I won't be able to make next week's gig, but I'll be back. And, you know, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
It'll be
famous fine. Last words from Katie Underwood. It'll be fine.
And what was it like, though, Katie, plugging into that machine, though? Because I was watching the old pop stars, because it was, you know, like I was quite young when it was big in 99. I was still in high school.
We weren't that young, Luke. That young.
Look, I'm trying to hide the fact that I'm decaying. But so like I was watching that, and I was like, it was so huge at the time. What was it like just being thrown out there? Like, you were just kind of, like, as you said, you were doing gigs, you were doing stuff. Like, just being thrown into the national spotlight all of a sudden. What was that like as a young person?
It was madness. I mean, for me at 24, I never really felt that young, and I'd certainly already had, you know, some performing experience and some musical experience. You know, I'd been to the UK. So, you know, I felt very global.
You're like Kylie.
Yeah, but I think, you know, getting into the band was very surprising, because and this is unlike all of the other girls that got in. This is going to sound bizarre. I never really wanted to be in the band. It was never in my plan to be in a pop band. I'm like, right. I want to be a great jazz singer. I want to be an awesome, funky dance music artist. Like, pop just
one of the interviews you did, you said your pop career was like a 10-year distraction from all the things you really wanted to do.
It was a total accident. So when I got in, other than the actual shock of getting in, the devastating process of having to tell Charlie, hey, you know, the last 6 months you spent investing in me as fronting your band, I'm going to Sydney and I'm not coming back. I felt awful. But had to do it. But for the national spotlight, like, I remember the record company people and media and PR people and management people, they kind of tried to prepare us, and they said, look, you don't really understand the power of television until you've been on it. Mm. And it's not going to be like a normal band. You will be famous very fast, and this thing is going to blow up. So they did kind of try to prepare us. But I don't think there's any way you can really prepare. Like, I remember the stats at the time. So what, in Australia, we've got a population of 25 million at the, maybe a bit more now, at the peak of the show, 2.5 million people were watching every week. So that's like 10% of the population. And it was
so trippy for me to see like the 2.6 million and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, but like that's a lot of people to be watching a single show. And then everyone who watched the show would tell five other people. So basically, you know, well over half the country at any one point was talking about this show, Pop Stars. So and I think the most jarring thing for me was Sophie and I were the most recognisable of the band members. I had bright flaming hair. You couldn't miss me. And Sophie, being the blonde, you know, always stood out from the start anyway. And she's gorgeous, of course, which helps. I mean, we're all gorgeous. But, I remember the whole thing of walking down the street and people just staring at you, like not even quietly staring, like openly mouth gape open, even running up to you staring, like crazy behavior that I had never seen, let alone experienced. And it was weird. It's like, hang on, what? Like last week I was no one, and this week suddenly I'm this entity that like moth to flames. People are literally running up to you in the street. That was really weird to get my head around, mostly because I'd never behaved that way for people that I liked. Like if I liked someone, I'm cool. But I didn't do the whole poster on the wall and hyperventilating and like breaking out in sweats. And
look, I saw Nikki Webster. Right. Nikki Webster was at the Gladstone RSL and I didn't even ask her for an autograph. I thought, just let Nikki be.
Nikki just wants to be Nikki right now. No, that's right. But you know what?
Jeff has no idea who Nikki Webster is.
you are in a minority. Like the level of rude that people just jump straight over if they see an opportunity to get you, get a photo, have a sign, have a cut. Like they're just there's this madness that takes them over, and they're like, you know, they will shove babies and strollers out of their to get to you. And I remember this bizarre moment. I was in, I don't know, like walking through Sydney somewhere on a bridge. Like I wasn't even anywhere. You know, I was just in the middle of nowhere. And so what would happen is clusters of people would sort of like once one person would get you and then a crowd would form and then suddenly you've got 20 people standing around you.
It's like The Walking Dead.
Kind of, yeah. But younger, you know? Yeah. And I remember
covered in Supre.
I was signing something over here and someone else was trying to have a photo here. And then there was this mother with a child and she, honest to God, treated me like I was a monument, like I was an inanimate object. She's like, she's talking, not even to me, to the child, going, just stand in front of it, just stand in front of it. And she's like desperately just trying to catch this photo. I'm like, you people are insane. And I don't think I ever really got over the insanity of that fame. And frankly, I was happy to see the back of it when I just sort of stepped back out of that.
You know, some people just don't like it, though. Hey, like, we spoke to Amy Jo. Like, she was the original Pink Power Ranger. Amy Jo was never about it. Yeah, we used to have the Yellow Power Ranger as one of the hosts of the show.
Yeah, telling me all that. I'm like, I did the convention circuit with her when we first did the show, 10 years ago. And it's insanity, especially like you get the whole cast from like that original movie. We'd just be trying to have drinks and it was like, this is 20 years ago. People are still insane. And then I'm, you know, in the booth with her and they're coming up and they're recognizing me from the radio show and it's trippy. But then the things that they're telling her or they're coming up with their kids, like, oh, you want me to take a picture? No, this is for me. Or the stories there's, and it's cute, right? That a kids TV show changed your existence, and she's just like, but what did I do? Like, it's intense to see. I'm like, oh dear God, I've never.
But I remember Amy was never about it though. She was just like really anxious, and she was just like not about the fame. Like, she was just like no. And that's why she's never done a lot of stuff because, like, she's obviously acted and produced and everything, but she's never done a lot of the fan stuff because it creeps her out and she's quite blatant about it. She's just like, it's too much for me. People are weird. What? People are weird.
Don't let him play you. He's a fangirl, okay? He did the first one at a convention in, like, the Pink Power Ranger costume. Like,
anyway, back on Katie.
Where are we? All right.
speaking of Power Rangers, what I thought was super refreshing and like really, really smart looking back on it was your third callback audition where you had to sing and you wore the infamous mirror top.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like you knew how to dress for the job you wanted. It was
but you didn't even want
the job, really.
Let me just correct you. Once I'm in something, then I'm going to do it.
You're in it.
I'm going to give it my best shot. But to me, it's like if I get in or don't get in, it wasn't a deal breaker. I already had my plans in place, you know. But I'll give this a spin. But the way I figured it, it's like, well, they're auditioning for a pop band. Everyone can sing. Everyone can dance. Everyone's kind of, you know, relatively good looking. But, well, I know, sure. But we're being fans, all right?
Katie, do we need to watch the videos again?
Okay, some people were terrible. But there were lots of people there that were, you know,
amazing.
Good enough, yeah. Right? Good enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but it's a pop band. So for me, the thing that distinguishes pop from any other genre is it's a look, right? Lady Gaga just reminded us all how much pop is about, what it's, you know, even Elton John.
About the package. Know,
chucking glasses and boots.
Yeah.
Not enough that he's incredibly talented and a great songwriter and a musician, but, you know, give the people a show. So I just went, you know what? They need the look. They need to see that I can deliver this so crazy, smart. Wacky, more than just the normal. And thankfully, I had a million crazy, wacky outfits because of my whole clubbing, raving, sci-fi.
My favorite.
Kind of thing. And I just went, I just need to wear the most outrageous thing I own. And it happened to be this mirrored breastplate that I picked up in Camden Market in the UK at this great shop called Cyberdog. And I remember when I bought it, I'm like, I don't know why I need this in my life. I just need it. And then
everyone does.
Everyone needs a mirrored breastplate.
Yes.
Right? So
I've got one in the closet.
And you know what, it got me noticed, and great thing too, because at that point my nerves had been so intense that I really hadn't been singing as well as I could. I was doing okay, but honestly my singing auditions were not going really well at that point. But that kind of got me over the line, and then they're like, this girl's got something. But then hilariously they're like, can you tone it down? Well, yes, I can do that.
I was watching. I just went through and like was watching all these the episodes because I've seen the American version, but and like the one episode where you guys are going in and you're getting your hair done or whatever, and I'm looking and I'm like, this chick, like her hair is kind of a mess, and she's supposed to be your stylist, and she's looking at you like, can we shave your head? And I'm like, what was she going for, the Sinead O'Connor look? Like, why did she shave her head? And then they're talking, and I'm like, looking at your hairstyles, they're like, girl, we were twins. Okay, yeah. I was at the club, had my hair done all like that, and had the, I was like, ooh, all right.
Yeah, and I was in that spiky hair, spiky color phase. I've done all the phases with the hair, every color, every style, you know, it grows back, so.
Yeah, no, not if you're a man, because, honey, I'm going bald. This. I can't do nothing now.
I still have too much hair, so, yeah, I'm lucky.
Jelly. I love it. Every interview I've seen you in that I was watching, like, I'm like, every time it's a different hairstyle. And I don't know. It's just you. It's just very fun for me. I love it.
It's very
it was fun.
Fun
for me, too, yeah.
So we've touched on it already briefly, but your show, the show, starting from literally an ad in a magazine, which, hello, you don't see that anymore. What's a magazine to start with?
I know, right?
And this tiny little show turned out to be like thousands of girls that have shown up for this audition.
Mm.
And then you guys are put in the pressure cooker and it got more so and more so and more so. Like you moved into a house together. And then, you know, the whole Chantel drama. You got given cars. You got taken away.
I liked the cars.
I want to know who, like, those cars stood out like dog's balls, though. It's like, well, gee, I wonder who's that. Yeah.
No, it was the ultimate marketing campaign. Very clever from the Beetle company in itself.
Yeah, but not everyone was still trying to keep it down low who was in the group at the time, weren't they?
They were and they weren't. You know, yeah. I think the cars came when the show was already on air. So then it became a fun game
to kind of spot
which Bardette was driving. I was going through an intense blue phase at that time in my life. Everything was blue all the time. So, naturally I got the blue one, which was cool. That was fun. Things get given, get taken away, what else?
Went from this tiny little, not tiny, I mean, it's Sydney, so it wasn't a tiny house. But
I know, it was. Yep.
It was tiny enough. It was as good. It looked like, you know, your first uni house, like when you move out and go to uni and share bedrooms.
We were in Darling Harbour. We had a great view, but it was a three-bedroom apartment with five girls. So
don't know each other.
How many bathrooms?
Two.
Oh, no.
Which still wasn't enough. So,
no.
Yeah, it was... that was pretty intense. I think we were in that apartment for about 4 months, and we were all very happy to move back out back after that. So I had a secret husband at that point, so I had to move him up to Sydney. So we moved to Newtown. Yeah, so
it's just nice all about the secret husband now.
Like you had a secret husband you were hiding.
Well, so we'll bring you back to the concept of pop, right? So pop is all about image and sex sells, and I knew this.
Yeah,
you want to be single, right? You want to be accessible to everybody. Also, it became pretty clear early on that I had a pretty strong gay following because everybody assumed that I was gay because I had short hair and wore glasses. Of course, she's a lesbian. So
and your hair was red. Come on.
So, of course. So, you know, the truth is I'm bisexual, but, you know, let's not split hairs. It's like, it's fine. I don't believe I'm gay. You know, let's just go with that.
After a few drinks, who cares? You know?
Well, you know, whichever way the wind is blowing, it's fine.
Right.
So at the time, too much.
Welcome to Uncensored Radio. This is how it works.
Exactly. So I had a fiance. So we were already engaged. But I didn't have a ring, so there was no hint to it. Anyway, at some point during the Crazy Pop Stars period, we got we were just working 7 days a week. That's just how it was. But we got a 10-day break. And so I'd already been engaged to my fiance for about a year, and he was getting really insecure and really afraid that I would break up with him and, you know, shack up with some famous overseas producer and leave him and, you know, do the whole shameless pop life thing. I was like, no, I won't do that. I kind of wish I had now. But anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, I was dumb and young and went, oh, of course I'll just marry you quickly in private because you're desperately insecure. Like, that's a great reason to get married.
Yeah.
So that's so he was happy, but I'm like, okay, but let's just, I'm going to have a ring on my finger now. So we'll just pretend that I'm just engaged and I'm not married. So that was our cover story for about 2 years. So as far as anyone was concerned, I was only engaged, which to someone who's desperately attracted to you, they're like, that means nothing to me, you know? So it didn't really get in the way, you know, I wasn't fully off the market according to them. And then, yeah, a couple of years later, when we went back to Melbourne, we got properly married, and that was all that. But yeah, that's the secret husband story. But yeah,
so much drama.
Oh, super secret. That. Yeah.
Well, so no, I want to just touch on a little bit more about the recording of that first Bardo album.
Sure.
Obviously, you guys were just literally thrown in and went work.
Yeah. I loved it.
But
I
loved it. It came out amazingly well. Like,
yeah.
I think the whole premise was Australian Spice Girls, but you guys became something completely different and cooler and a little bit more mature. Right.
We were really lucky. The production team around us was incredible. So they had already kind of pre-selected most of the songs. We were given a short list of about, I don't know, 100. That then we whittled down to the 12 or so that made the album. So we didn't get to write on the first album. So the quality of songs were there. It's okay. It's fine.
I have one objection. I have one objection.
Okay.
I love the entire album except for one song.
Yeah, that we're the same.
can I guess what song it is?
You tell me yours and I'll tell you mine.
It just doesn't fit on there, and it's Girls Do, Boys Don't.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty bad. Yeah.
No offense to Belinda, because I know she was briefly in Girlfriend for a time, but sounds like a Girlfriend B-side reject song. It's just like, not the vibe.
A lot of those, like the old, like, 90s Aussie pop albums, like, there was always those songs that were like, okay, someone gave somebody a keyboard with, like, a pre-recorded beat. And, like, you know, Melissa Couts was one of them. Like, some of her album was like, oh, my God, like, geez. Like, did she do this when she was in her room when she was 12? Like,
yeah. Oh, look, some of them were dreadful, but you've got to understand that they knew the market they were aiming for, and that was the tween and the teen market.
Right.
So, you know, we didn't have to like it. We just had to do it. But
all right, I have to know this song. I have to know the song, Katie. What's the song you hate?
Oh, you know what? I think it might have been Other Side of Love or...
Yeah. It's not my favorite.
Other side of love, like it was love. One of those shoulder yeah, popping exactly. songs. Like, oh, if I pop my shoulders one more time, I'm going to kill myself. Like honestly, the choreography in that era was just like everything.
Blame Jason Coleman.
That guy.
The concert we did was like
with the Fabio hair in the show. Oh, yeah. With the you big curly.
Can I tell you, I actually bumped into Jason Coleman at one of my meditation events just the other weekend. I did not even recognize him, but he's looking great. And he's got his whole like dance university now. He's really done incredibly amazing things with his career. But yeah, for real, had not seen him for 20 years. And we had a great old natter. And he was just blown away by what I was doing, you know, in this little yoga studio down at St. Andrew's Beach in Victoria.
Well, actually, so, I really want to know about like
doing really well.
Like with your healing with music, like what is that? Like, can you tell us like what you're actually doing with people? And what kind of people are accessing it? Because I was actually thinking the other day, like, you know, about like, you know, like a lot of people have depression, things like that. Do they have like a lot of the people that are accessing something like healing through music? Do they have that insight to know that? Because I'm just thinking about like, you know, with men with depression, like they never want to tell anyone and things like that. Yeah. Do you get a lot of different people, or is it just like the alternatives? Am I making sense?
I understand the question. So it's the appeal of what I offer is quite diverse. So I think, you know, the baseline appeal of it is that most people these days are looking for new healthy ways to relax. You know, we all know the old ways of relaxing: drinking, smoking, partying, sex, drugs, rock and roll, over shopping, overeating, right? That's one way.
I've got them all down.
Of numbing out and relaxing. But, you know, more and more people are looking for different ways they can do that. You know, for some people it's yoga, for some people it's running, for some people it's macrame, you know, whatever. But if you're a musical person, and obviously science has shown us a lot and, you know, so much research now to show how beneficial meditation practices are. So really sound healing or sound meditation is just another way of accessing that state, that mental state, that state that you're in where your body's more relaxed, your mind is more relaxed, and maybe you feel good as well. And that's where the musical element comes in. So I think the way that I sort of run my events is very accessible for people. So unlike a yoga class where sometimes you can feel really intimidated if you don't know what the fuck you're doing, or everyone's skinny and or wearing those yoga pants. And it's like there's such a price of admission sometimes with those events where it's all hipster and you think, man, I'm not in that tribe. You know, I feel like I don't fit in. Whereas for me, you know, I don't wear anything particularly, you know, different. We're not drinking chai tea. We're not, you know, requiring that people say namaste, you know, it's none of that. It's just, you know what, here's your options. Music is going to be playing. You can go sleep. You can relax. You can meditate. You can be eyes open. You can be eyes shut. You can experience this sound journey however you like. But the intention and the idea is that when you get to the end of it, you are going to be more physically relaxed. You are going to be mentally chilled, and you might even be euphoric or have some other spiritual experience. You know, all of these things are possible through the sounds that are created. So as to what I do, I'm a multi-instrumentalist, so I work with a number of different instruments. So crystal bowls, not crystal balls, I'm not psychic. So crystal singing bowls, Tibetan singing bowls. I have an instrument called a hand pan, which is a steel tongue drum. That's actually a little harpy drum. And then and various chimes and other kind of soothing sounds. But probably my point of difference, because there's lots of people that are doing what I'm doing, is I use a looper and I loop my voice live. So what that means is I basically create my own choir that's improvised as I go, and I infuse healing Tibetan and Vedic mantras in that. So for people for whom silent sitting meditation bores the absolute fucking eyeballs off them, they come to one of my events and go, wow, there's this lush soundscape where I can put my attention and there's always something going on, and yet it's relaxing. So I think that's where the appeal is, that if traditional meditation you just can't connect with it, most people connect with music. And this is just a way of kind of inviting people into that space, going, you know, this is for you. This can be for you. That's the rave. That's what I do.
So were you practicing this kind of stuff in the middle of the Bardo journey? Was that something that was...
Oh, no.
Or did that come later with ways to, like, you know, kind of heal yourself?
Yeah, so my professional journey echoed my personal journey. So in my late 20s, after the crash of Bardo, Disco Montego, I started a solo career. My album, my record company folded without telling me.
Oh, my God.
And yeah. And look, it happens to a lot of people, you know. Yeah. We were working on the second single of what was to be my album release, and the owner of the record company was secretly moving himself up to Cairns, which is like the middle of buttfuck Australia, up the top of the Australia.
You don't have to tell Luke. He lives in Rockhampton.
And just fucked right off from me, from everyone who was working for him, and just dropped us like a hot scone and about three other artists at the same time. So, I mean, you know, the industry is cruel at the best of times.
Yes, Australian music industry, hey? Yay.
So after that, I went to therapy for the first time in my life because I'd always had a very strong idea of who I was and what I wanted and where I was going. And after all of that, I'm like, man, I've invested so much time and energy in this version of myself professionally, and that's dissolved. You know, what do I do now? Yeah. Anyway, so the reason I bring this up is that part of that process is my therapist tried to introduce me to meditation. He said, I think this is something that will really benefit you. But at 28, every time I tried to sit still and shut my eyes, I would either start crying or burst out laughing. I just couldn't do it. Aww. I just could not do it, as many other people experience. So I have great empathy for people who go, I cannot meditate. Like, I'm not there yet. I get that, you know, because I was like that in my late 20s. But it did kind of spark an interest, and I started reading about it and started trying to practice and trying different styles. And so that sort of evolved and evolved and evolved. So I suppose fast forward now into my 30s, and then at that point I'm like, okay, I know I want to have a family. I need to change careers. I want to be in something that I can be self-employed, that I can be very flexible. And around that time I remembered that I loved massage. I loved healing. I loved being involved with people. And so I retrained totally as a remedial massage therapist. I did my training as a meditation teacher. And then shortly after that discovered this thing called sound healing and thought, oh, my God, this is made for me. And then studied various courses over subsequent years and, yeah, just totally transformed my life. And at that point I assumed that the performance part of my life was over. I'm like, oh, well, it's sad to let that go. But that door is shut. And now I'm just, you know, this massage therapist, meditation teacher. Little did I know that that would then evolve into me doing events every weekend, three events a weekend, like every week of the year.
Never assume.
Where I'm singing and sharing music, but in a very different way, in a way that the focus was not on me. It's like the anti-fame game. You know, my audience has their eyes shut. They're not looking at me at all.
Yep.
That what I'm creating for them is allowing them to have often a profoundly relaxing and moving experience. And I love that. I love being a part of that and really making a difference in people's lives and helping them feel better. I mean, you know, who doesn't need that?
Yeah. As you said, it must be a huge difference. Oh, sorry, Jeff, go.
Do we have online classes for us Americans?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we do. Thank you. Great segue. So all through last year, for a long time, people had been asking me, are you going to do stuff online? And I had this limiting belief that meant that I believed it wouldn't work online, that the vibration of the sound that I was doing in a room just wouldn't translate. And for a long time, I didn't believe it. And then COVID hit and we're all stuck in our lounge rooms for a year, right? And so I had to just try it. And so it was March last year and I just quickly, you know, did the pivot and innovate and went, right, okay, put the camera on a stand, let's go, let's try this out. And with a bit of trial and error, started doing it. So for most of last year, I was offering free sessions as a way of not only supporting people out there, but also keeping myself connected as well. So it was as beneficial for me to be connected to that online community as others. And I wasn't charging because I thought, well, no one's got any money, nobody's working, you know, we're all spending 2020 in our lounge rooms. So, but yeah, at the top of this year, you know, I started developing a loyal following. So now I've got, I run all my sessions on Facebook. It's just everyone's there already, you know, it's an obvious platform. And so I've created a little online events group. So now for $25 a month or $20 US a month.
I'm going to be there.
People get access to 6 one-hour sessions a week. So the two sessions that I offer, one is like a pure sound healing session, which is basically me playing instruments, doing the mantras, doing what I would do in a normal live event. So not really any talking, just transmitting the sound and, you know, you just kind of chill out in your own zone. And then the other four sessions, I introduce people to my love of mantra meditation. So this is using Tibetan and Vedic mantras. And so we spend about 15, 20 minutes talking about the meaning of the mantra and benefits and pronunciation. And then a good half an hour where the idea is that you chant along with me and I kind of guide you step by step. And so every week we're learning a new mantra and evolving through. So it's really lovely. And then at the end of every session, you know, we all have, I mean, I can't see them with Facebook, the visual aspect is just one way. But of course, you know, comments and emoticons go a long way. So there's always a portion at the end of every session where people are tuning in live and we'll, you know, share our experiences and people are like, oh my God, I saw this and that and I felt this and that, or I had a shitty day and now I feel amazing. And it's just wonderfully validating for me, but also for everyone else in the tribe, which is what I call our online community. So, yeah, so that's kind of a whole new thing. I never thought I would have an online business. But yeah, it's wonderful. It keeps me grounded and keeps me connected, and it's great. It means now that I can reach people that could never come to an event of mine. You know, maybe they live overseas, or maybe they're disabled and they live in the country in New South Wales somewhere, or maybe they've got young kids and they can't leave the house, you know, because their kids are like 1, 2, and 4 and they just can't get out, you know, for 5 years, and now they can access these sessions as well. So yeah, it's working really well for everybody.
And it must be refreshing. It must be refreshing for you having to come, as we were talking about with Bardo, having come from that intense scrutiny on the sound that you're making. Because if you watch back those Pop Stars episodes, everyone wanted to chip away at you guys straight away before they even really heard anything. They're like, "Oh, well, you're not a real band. You don't play instruments. You don't do this. You don't do that." And you're like, "Well, actually,
they called her a fashion victim." I was like, why?
Because I wasn't a fashion victim. I think fashion victim is someone who is actually just always wearing good fashion. I just didn't give a shit what I wore. I knew that most people wouldn't like it. But, you know, I wasn't trying
except for the mirrored breastplate.
Yeah.
All your gay boys loved it.
No, that's the thing. So the people that loved me were already wearing alternative fashion. They were either goths or they were ravers, or they just liked kooky stuff, or they were in the gay scene. And I'll tell you a really heartwarming story. So I did 2 years ago, I did my first performance of the Bardo songs in like 18 years. There was this guy who had a gay night running in Melbourne. He's like, "Will you come and do some Bardo songs? You know, we'll make you a backing track. We'll make it work." He even got me a backing singer and everything. So I did this night of Bardo songs and it was so fun. Anyway, this guy was there and he was in full latex. He's come up,
oh, right, as you do.
As you do, right? So I'll just fill you in, Jeffrey. My first outfit in the Poison film clip, our very first Bardo clip, was a purple latex catsuit. So that kind of set the benchmark.
Fabulous,
right?
So we all needed a purple latex catsuit in the 90s.
Who doesn't?
We did.
Exactly. Oh, my God. So good. So anyway, really this guy comes up.
Oh, gosh, there you are.
When I watched you in that, when I first saw you in that film clip, you know, 20 years ago, he goes, he was in his young, you know, early teens. He said, "Something in me just changed and I've never been the same." He said, "My love of latex started solely because of the impact it had."
Katie Underwood.
And he's like, "It made me feel that it was okay for me to be me."
Just don't pee on a robot dog.
You know? No, I was going to say, Katie Underwood, so are you peeing on the robot dog? What is going on?
What the fuck? I love this story, Katie.
Do you need the story?
Share. I need the story. Share the story.
Jeff needs the story.
Yeah, like, I'm a newfound Underwood, so I, yeah, what, why are you pooping on a dog?
I need to ask this.
Why are you a dog pisser, Underwood?
Oh my god. There's so many layers to this story. Okay, so I need to preface this by saying we had so many photo shoots, like more photo shoots. I spent more time in photo shoots than singing. It was probably one of the most depressing things about being in this pop band. It was really like, fuck, we never get to sing, but I'm always doing a photo shoot. Anyway, so this was one of those. But every photo that got proofed, our system was every person in the band plus a manager all had to approve all the photos. So our process was you'd go through and there'd be like 100, you know, proofs. And you'd have one of those little, you know, cameras and you'd be looking at it under the microscope or whatever. And you'd put a tick next to the one you liked and a cross next to the one you didn't. So you can imagine five women with varying degrees of body dysmorphia and, you know, shame issues and fucking whatever. I don't like my smile. My thighs look fat. My hair's gone the wrong way. Whatever.
Having just gone to the ringer of social, of like media.
It was so hard.
Yeah.
So hard to find a photo that all five girls went, yeah, we're happy with that. So this one with the now it was supposed to be a lead for this robot dog. And this was one of the ones where everyone was really happy. All the heads were looking good. And then someone pointed out, they're like, it looks like you're pissing on the dog.
And like, it's not pee. It's not supposed to be piss.
No. So, the different layer to this is that the dog was a Sony dog and we were signed with Warner. So at the time we thought, oh, this is hilarious. We're making like a subtle dig at, you know, we're pissing all over Sony with this album.
Literally and, with the album.
Projectile pissing. Projectile pissing.
And we're kind of agreeing, you know, they're going to break, you know, this is going to come up, right? You know, can you just deal with this? Because all of our heads look really good in this photo. And I'm like, all right, I'll deal with it when and if it comes up. And, of course, it did many, many times.
And so, it's still coming up today.
Still coming up. So that's the Sony dog piss.
So you took one for the team. You were like,
I took one for the team. Yeah. I often took one for the team. Yeah.
Watching the show, one of the things that struck me, you seemed to be the most well-rounded of all of them. Like, you seemed the most comfortable in yourself. Like, you were kind of like, okay, let's do this. And then, like, you even in the one episode, you're like, I've kept my mouth shut, but now it's time to say anything. All this is getting put together at last minute. It's not okay. Yeah. But you were, it didn't come across as, I think they tried in editing or whatever to make it maybe try to be a little drop, but it didn't. Like, you were just expressing, like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Let's hurry up and wait.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that I managed to avoid any cruel editing cuts. Many of the girls didn't and were
misrepresented. Yeah, Tiffany got the bitch edit, didn't she?
Yeah, totally. They made her out to be far worse than she was. The truth is, Tiffany was one of my favorite people to be around because she was just so straight up and so blunt. You always knew where you stood with
and
her.
And still is to this day.
I love people like that, you know. Yes. But if you're at all sensitive or you take things the wrong way, you know, dealing with people that are really blunt, cut and dry can be quite confronting. For me, it was refreshing and I loved her for it and still do. But, so for the most part, I kind of gave good chat. You know, they liked getting me on the little bits where stuff would happen and then there'd be like an image of me going, blah, 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 this is what we're doing. And I seem to end up being kind of the, I don't know, pseudo narrator for a lot of the show. There was that one, the episode was, and I remember it was the day we were doing our first performance at the State Theatre. And I'm like, man, we're supposed to be doing a good job.
Yeah.
And
they're
so fashion. Far in my face. Oh, my God.
I had that hairstyle too, girl. I had that. I would go to the club, have my little glow sticks and my little shot tray, and I had that, and it was red. Girl,
yeah, right.
Where have you been my whole life?
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, that was intense. Watching, that was actually the last one that I watched before we got on, was you guys getting ready for your first live performance. And I was getting anxiety just you just, when you go to perform, and it didn't seem like, was that, was some of that made up for the show, or was, how real was all
look at the face.
Fucking real. I mean, that's why I said what I said on camera. I'm like, this is really happening. You know, we are really trying to put on a show. And although I didn't often get that stressed and nervous, you know, I was pretty loaded with stress that day, as we all were. And you know, you're doing a sound check, and then you've got a costume fitting, and then you've got to do a this and a recurl that, and now I've got to get dressed, and I've got to do my makeup.
And I guess, like, there was a lot riding on it too, because it was kind of like, you know, like, do you guys have the chops or not? Like, you know,
we had a lot to prove. You know, it was one thing to be a TV star, and we realized that this first concert and then the release of the album subsequently was going to be the real evidence to show, oh, no, actually, they can sing and dance live, and these girls do have some talent. So in Australia, you know, pop is really derided quite badly. It's not even seen as a genuine art form.
Kylie made it work.
No, that's not true. Kylie was assaulted by the media and the press and the public.
What was she called? She used to be called the singing budgie, wasn't she?
Not easy. And she had to go to the UK, where they then embraced her as their own. When she made her success over there, then Australia was forced to reconsider their approach to her and go, oh, okay, well, maybe pop is a thing and we have to love her now. But only because she fucked off and went, you guys suck. You know, I'm going over here where these people love me. So, you know, it takes a lot of grit, I think, to not only make and maintain a pop career, but to deal with all of the bullshit that gets thrown at you. So yeah, there was a lot riding on it for us in this concert. We felt we had a lot to prove.
So we're gonna keep going, because there is so much more to your story than just Bardo. So
okay.
I feel like we need to just, you know,
sure, kind wait, of I gotta know oh, one thing.
Go, Jeffrey. Go.
Just one thing, go, Jeffrey.
This asshole. Okay. I'm vile. Okay, so I just got to know, like, what was the real story? Why you bounced out early? You were like, peace, I'm done. Like, were you not getting paid? What were you going on with your contracts? Like, were they shit like they in America? Because that's, like, a big thing here for shows of, in, you know, early 2000s, American Idol. Everybody got ripped off. And that's something that is only really kind of coming out now.
That's surreal. So, you want to know the story of how I departed?
Yeah, like, were you just like, I'm done with this shit, they're not together?
We won't get into the conspiracy theories, because we all know there's many stories behind the Bardo breakup, but let's talk about you.
I am the source, so I can tell you why I left.
Let's talk about you.
I won't talk about why the girls eventually disbanded. That's their story to tell, but I can tell you my part of it. So, interestingly, and it's, again, it's just one of those, fuck, man, the music industry really sucks sometimes. Yes, and so we were overseas. We were in the UK. We were recording our second album. So we'd gone over there to record with Kathy Dennis, who was the famous writer-producer of Can't Get You Out of My Head, right? Okay. And so many others. So it was such an honour and a privilege to be working with her. And then another equally, you know, established producer. So they'd been given the brief, you know, we've got five girls, but we want you to cut together the hottest, you know, version of it. And so, unlike the first album, where all the producers had been given a very strict brief, we want you to evenly distribute all the girls' vocals between the five of them, regardless of how it sounds. Okay? That was a brief. Do you understand?
Interesting.
Okay? So that was the brief for the first album. The second album, they're like, now we just want to make the best album possible. So the brief that was given to the producers then was, all five girls will record as much as they can, but you cut together the best edit you can get out of these girls. So we'd done two tracks with them, and we'd all, you know, done our bit in the studio and done our best. And then I remember there was a day where we were listening back to the two tracks, and everyone was keen to see, you know, where they featured in the songs. Now, I featured heavily in both, which was felt great to me.
Yeah, for sure.
It didn't go down so well with some of the other members of the band. So that started to create some very uncomfortable tension in it. And, you know, I get it from their point of view. You know, everyone wants their moment in the sun. And it wasn't like I had made that, you know. It was someone else's decision.
And
so,
it's just the reality of having five voices. I mean, your voice has the quality it has. Tiffany's voice has the quality it had. Your voices just lend themselves very well to that pop vibe. No, that's right. And Empty Room was one of the best songs you've ever recorded. It wasn't even on an album.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, you know, and had we continued along that line, you know, different voices do suit different songs. Like, I'm not great with ballads, for instance. So, you know, I'm sure there would have been plenty of other moments for other girls to be given the opportunity to shine. But as it fell out just for those first two tracks, you know, it was weighted heavily towards me, which on the one hand felt great, but then there was all this horrible jealousy and confrontation that some of the girls at that time actually said, you need to tell them to take your voice out and put ours in. Like, it was really fucked. So put me in a very awkward decision. So that was kind of the climate that was happening. We were in the UK at the time. We'd also taken on a new manager. And I remember the moment like it was yesterday. We're in the van, all of us together. He turns around to me. I'm in the back of the van. And he said, oh, I think I'd like, they're doing auditions for Hair, the musical. I think you should audition for it. Like, he's just talking to me.
Oh, shit.
And I said, what? If you haven't noticed, David, please, we're in the UK recording the second Bardo album. How is that at all compatible with me auditioning for a musical? Mm-hmm. And it was just so odd. And he's like, oh, well, you know, probably, I think he might have said something like, oh, you probably won't get in, or you might not get in, or if you did, we'll, you know, we'll work it out. But I think it would be a really good experience for you to do it. What, so the whole
fuck?
Thing. Exactly, right? It was like, I don't get it, mate, but all right. Sure. So when we got back to Melbourne, I went to the audition, and unlike most of the people auditioning who had prepared all of these musical theatre hits, I'm like, I don't know musical theatre, but I know jazz. So these are the songs I can do. So, you know, the audition was literally a guy at the piano, and he's like, and I said, do you know this? Do you know that? Whatever. So I did. I sung Night and Day. I sung a couple. He's like, can you do something else? I'm like, yeah, I've got like 50 songs up here. So what do you want? You know, so I gave him a couple of songs. And they were all very happy and I went away. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I think that went well. And then didn't hear anything. Like, oh, never mind, you know, probably just not their cup of tea. You know, you're either what they're looking for or you're not. Anyway, about a month later, I get this random phone call out of the blue from someone from, what was his name? Harry
Miller.
Harry Miller, right?
This bitch knows, of course he does.
From Harry and Miller's office. And says, oh, it's such and such from so-and-so office. How are you? Yeah, I'm fine. How are you? She said, oh, I was just calling to follow up to see if you got the script we sent you.
What script?
Just calling up to see if you got the video that we sent through for you. I'm like, what are you even talking about? I haven't got anything from you at all. She said, well, we sent all the details to your manager. You know, you got the part. I'm like, oh, wow. Holy fuckballs. Like, what? This is the first I'm hearing of it. She said, okay, right. I think you need to come in and have a meeting with Harry. So that's what I did. And and I went into his office and, it was a phone meeting. That's right. And and he's like, we think you're perfect. You'd be amazing. We loved what you did. Blah, 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 blah. And the role was like the quirky chick, and they were going to float me down from the ceiling, and they were describing all of this, you know, it was going to be some big huge arena show. And at that point we were earning $600 a week from Bardo. Anyway, he got the fun.
Getting that Power Ranger money. They weren't giving shit.
Yeah. No. So then he gets the accounting guy on the phone, and he said, have they told you how much this is worth? I said, no, I don't know. He said, oh, let me get Jeff on the phone or whoever. And I said, so, Jeff, can you just tell Katie how much she'll be getting per show? And he said, $2,000 per show.
Bitch, sign me up. Bye. Bye, girl.
Yeah. I'm like, right.
Cash that check.
No, actually, I said, you know what, amazing opportunity. I'm really excited. I said, but I am still in the band. You know, I need to work this out. And he said to me something that really kind of caught my attention. He said, honestly, Katie, he said, where do you see yourself? Do you want to stay in a pop band where you're not challenged and you're limited to what you can do? Or do you want to take the next step in your career and, you know, take flight in the musical theatre industry? And I'm like, yeah, okay. And get paid, like serious amount
of money.
So I'm like, all right. So I went back to the girls and I said, this is what's on the table. It makes no sense. And David Caplice is a dickhead, but this is what's happened and this is the opportunity in front of me. you know, I know we all said that we'd stay together and this is what we're supposed to do, but fuck, man, if this was you, what would you do? Right. And, you know, half of them said, go for it. The other half said, it's a betrayal. How can you? And so yeah. I was just left having to make my own decision. And so I made the decision that was best for me and went, you know, it's been great, but this seems like a great idea. The hilarious
you kind of
thing
feel
is
like
the show
hindsight.
Got cancelled and I never got yeah. to do it. But it
that makes me crazy.
Yeah. Again, industry.
Yeah.
But it was still a valuable thing to do because it showed me that I had worth well beyond Bardot and that people who didn't know me could see that. And that meant there would be opportunities for me, you know, in the future. And I wasn't afraid of moving past Bardot. So,
well, yeah. And I was getting down to some of your newer tracks, that Danger and Beautiful.
Yeah.
Loved that. And then my I think my new favorite song is going to be Pop Trash.
Oh, you found that little gem.
I
oh
sure
God.
Did. And I was like, what is this sticky and sweetness? I had it like the kids are like bouncing around, Jim. Like, what's this?
It's a solid track, I tell you. The guy I wrote that with, so Morten Schollen, who was in the UK. So when I went over to do my writing trip over there, and at the time, Holly Valance was a thing, right? I don't know if you boys remember
kiss,
Holly
kiss.
Valance.
Yeah.
Kiss, kiss.
We're gay, like mid-30s Australian men.
So
we know Holly Valance.
So she represented everything that people love to hate about pop, which was that she was famous for being on TV and then she married somebody rich and it was all a who you know thing and then suddenly she was having this successful pop career. So she was, you know, very, yeah, lovable and hateable at the same time. So it was
but
right
hey,
around.
She got some tunes, man. She got some tunes.
Oh, yes. No, she did well. And look, you know, power to her for putting up with all that crap. But I was at the time, it just made me really irate. And so that song was actually based around my observation of the Holly Valance situation.
I love it. So, Katie, what you're telling us is that there is how much Katie Underwood solo pop material in your little.
Oh, so
bag.
Much. Well, there's a whole other album of it, you know.
Shut up.
Yeah. Actually, really, one of my favourites I did with a Pop Machine production team in Sweden, the song was called Lost for Words, and it was a brilliant song, if I might say. I mean, a lot of the songs that I wrote were terrible. You know, that's just what happens when you write. Not everything you write is great or even good. But this was one of those ones where you're like, that's a good song. But then the album deal dissolved and it didn't end up going through. Anyway, about 5 years later, we got contacted by the manager of Steps or something, or was it S Club 7? Like, so one of those artists was stepping out to do a solo thing and they're like, she wants to record your song. And I'm like, fuck yes, bring that shit on. Of course they can do it. But unfortunately, I have such a massive vocal range. Mm-hmm. And so there were lots of deep parts and high parts in the song and she was not able to pull it off, regardless of the fact they kept trying to change the key up and down and like, no, she can't sell it like you sold it. So it's like, fuck, man. Now I understand. When you want to be a pop writer, this is why the melody has to be like here so that anyone can sing it.
Yeah.
Because if you do too much, it makes it really hard for people to replicate. So, you know, lesson learned there. But again, it was a nice validation as a writer. To go, you know, this song has appeal to other people, you know, beyond me. So that was kind of cool.
Is that track on YouTube?
No, I could, I could easily. Well, legally, it gets really tricky because I have co-writers. You know, the producers own half the song, and I'm not supposed to release it without their permission. So we kind of did a sneaky with Pop Trash, but Pop Trash had already been used. So BMG had picked that song up for their not the Pop Star series. What's the other vocal series?
Sony Idol.
So they picked that song up and they used it in South African Idol and they used it in Croatian Idol. The star there did it. She sung it, a version of it in Croatian. Which was trippy to hear my song in another language.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it was really cool. And she, when she came out, I saw the video of her performing this track, and she had the flaming red hair and the attitude. She was like a, ooh, a version
Jack
of
your style, Jack your style,
a Croatian version of me. But you know what they say, that flattery is the highest form of, no, what is it? Imitation is the highest imitation. Form of flattery. Yeah. So that was really lovely. So I figured, you know what? I figured that Morten Schjolin had kind of made his money on that track already. So, you know, what's the worst that can happen? They can tell me to pull it off. Meh. So I suppose in theory I could do the same with Lost Words. You know, it's been 20 years, so they probably
love, look, care. If it happens to find it, its way in, yeah. Like if all to if all email. Your back, all that unreleased stuff finds its way into someone's email, like I'm sure we wouldn't be heartbroken. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I'll on the down low, I'll send it to you, and we'll
don't even. I've heard the rumor that you're on ASAP as well. You've got that version. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what was listening to the music, you know, because their boys are like, oh, Katie Underwood's coming out. And I'm like, okay, well, what, you know, America. Listening to it, I'm like, oh my God. I sent it to my friend. I'm like, didn't we do this in drag?
Yeah.
And we did. I was like, I knew it. I'm like, where did I know the song from? And it finally, I messed it. He's like, girl, he's like, there was five of us and it was a hot mess. He's like, your rice tip fell out.
Yeah. I think that was one of my favorite periods of when Beautiful came out, and it was such a hit, and it became a dance hit before people really knew it was me. So again, it was kind of validating as a performer and an artist to have people love this track without the insane amount of media machine that was behind the, you know, the Bardo. It was easy to kind of write that off and go, oh, they were really successful because, you know, they were all over TV. Whereas Beautiful was, it was a hit in its own right. And, you know, we all felt,
you know, I was at the
that.
Gym the other day, Katie, and they played Beautiful, like the music video and everything on the screen. And I was like, oh, shit, it's Katie.
I still get royalties for that song. But one of the most fun periods of that, because obviously, I'm in the gay community, so I always know a lot of drag queens and you know, gender fluid people and all that stuff. And I was at my local Newtown Hotel watching the weekly drag show, and they did Beautiful. And I was right in the front because they knew I was there. I mean, they knew me anyway. And I'm like, girl, you did that better than I ever did. So
That must have been really therapeutic for you, having to, you know, you performed at the Arias in 2000 with Bardot, and then you came back 2 years after everything had died down as this solo entity, and you'd co-written on Beautiful, like you've proven that you've got the chops, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I will say it's really hard to write a hit, and it's very unpredictable to know what's going to be a hit or not, and just got lucky, you know, with Beautiful. It was the right song at the right time. And the Disco Montego boys were incredibly talented producers. So, you know, that goes a long way. But even the only other, well, legitimate hit that I felt I had beyond that was Be Together, which was my friend T-Funk in 2006. And again, that became licensed to Ministry of Sound, and it kind of came, you know, a pseudo global hit moment. But honest to God, when I wrote the lyrics for that, so Tim would do the music, I would do the words and the melody and all the harmonies, whatever. And at the end of that day that we worked together, and he said, I think this is going to be a hit. And I'm like, really? I just didn't think it was anything special. So it's sometimes it's really odd what people gravitate to. So it's, you know, you can write 1,000 songs, but the difference between a good song and a hit, it's honest to God, just luck and timing. It's the right sound at the right time. People just go, oh, my God, I love this, and it makes no sense. So,
The right people at the right time. I mean, you've done your pop stuff, you've done your dance stuff, you had your kids, and then in 2019, just randomly out of nowhere, the Bardo stuff finally becomes available on streaming.
Yeah.
It's just like, and did you feel that groundswell of support and go, oh my God, people are still into this? Like,
it was very surprising. I never expected that. It was one of the delights of 2020 for us to have that start to come up. And I think we call them baby Bardos, because a lot of the people that are like mad Bardo fans were barely born when we were in the band. I'm like, how old?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah.
These guys in line. And I'm like, how old are you? I'm like, oh, 28. I'm like, you were four. How do you even know? He's like, oh, we rediscovered it late, you know, through pop stars on YouTube. And a lot of these fans, new fans, particularly on Insta that I was connecting with, had really only discovered Bardo in the last few years. So for them, it was fresh. You know, it was now for them, even though it was retro for us. So that was really, really surprising and delightful. And, yeah, and then
well, you girls also released, like some a cappella covers of songs.
If anyone was to ever doubt that you guys had talent, all I have to say is listen to this.
Oh, we're watching.
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's doing it.
Oh, oh yeah. I love your hair.
I liked this.
I have a question about this as well.
Okay.
Can I just say I always love these days as well? It's probably my favorite. Bardo
song. Someone was making me mad. Good and bad.
Get you back, just to get you back. But these days, the world's all right. Sunshine's bright. Kicking out the bad dreams these days. To the shoulders. Positively some way. These days go on. Long after you've gone. These days go on.
It was so lovely, and I have to say,
we're finishing the clip's finishing now.
Oh, we gotta finish.
I have to say, a massive thank you to Joe Daddick, who was the singular, persistent person who approached us all and tried to get a Bardo physical reunion happening. And then when COVID made it obvious that that just was not going to be possible. That, got us together online, organized the guitarist, got us to download this a cappella app and made it all happen and really, single-handedly revitalized our love and passion for the Bardo and then made the Bardo vinyl release happen as well as the online thing. So, massive shout-out to Joe for making that happen. But,
it still on the cards, Katie, though, that Bardo may do something once all this COVID crazy stops?
No. Look, we tried. I mean, maybe in another 5 years when everyone's lives has changed. But the way it kind of fell out. I mean, Sophie's was never going to come back to the fold. You know, she's worked hard on creating her own brand.
She's a bachelorette.
She's a bachelorette. She's so many other things. You know, and from one business person to another. You know, it was obvious to me that there was never any reason or any appeal for her to come back to that fold. So, she was invited back in, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. So then we tried to make it happen with the four of us. But in the end, it worked out that, Sally has a young family still, very young. So I think her kids are sort of three. She's got two kids, three and under. And it's really hard to be away from your children as a mother for a long time when your kids at that age. So, there were various other concerns that came up along the way and logistics and, how do we get paid and all of that. But I think when it came down to it, both her and Tiffany, who has six children.
Oh, I saw that in the interviews. I'm like, girl.
Man. So, there were some serious things that we had to just accept, reality. It's one thing to have a fantasy for getting everyone back in the same room, but we were all living in different states. Belinda lives in Singapore, and it just became too hard. So we settled on doing a few of these really gorgeous acapellas, and then I spun off and got my looper out and was doing versions of Bardo.
You've done some amazing Bardo stuff.
Your YouTube so channel. Fun.
I've always been really lazy with YouTube. I'm lazy with it. I've never really been great with it. I'm mainly, Facebook and Instagram is like, oh my God, that's enough. I'm old, I'm 45. That's as much as I can handle. But I
like us, should... like Facebook's where we're at. Like the others, like it's too much.
It's too much to do. But I had a ball and really enjoyed getting back into the old Bardo songs and then totally just reinventing them and smashing them up and spitting them out and doing weird versions of them. So I creatively, it was a really potent time. I had one of my best years as an artist. I'm like, man, I love this shit. You know, why am I not doing this more? So
you know how I feel about it because I've harassed you enough. On Instagram going, oh my god, release this, what's that, I want that, give me this. I'm one of those.
it would be a fun project, and I may get around to it, would be to do because what was I was calling them ISO mixes of all of the Bardo songs, the Katie ISO mixes. So it would be really interesting to kind of go back and do a total Bardo cover album, but my versions of them, and just kind of smash them to pieces, where it's kind of like remixing it.
Yeah. Maybe Tiffany and Belinda could, you know, just record a couple of lines.
I think that's about as close as we would get to having a Bardo album. But I think it'll take another 5 years at least for our
25th reunion. Let's do it.
It's not impossible for Sally and Tiffany to possibly be available. But
lottery, it's on. If I win the lottery, we're doing a documentary. We're doing a new album. We're doing a tour. I'll be like this. Make it rain.
Show me the money.
But you have, speaking of new albums.
Yes.
You have just.
Oh, I have one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to?
Yeah, go for it.
Here's one I prepared earlier. So Mantra Dreaming. So Mantra Dreaming it's a double album. It's 2 hours. And as you might imagine, it's heavily infused with Tibetan and Vedic mantras and designed specifically as a sleep aid. So a lot of the tracks are kind of 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes long. It's very soothing, lots of rich vocal layers. And so I do vocals, I do drums, I do handpan, chimes. And lots and lots and lots of vocals. So very happy. I had my USBs a couple of weeks ago and then various lockdown, COVID, whatever. The CDs were delayed like forever. So I finally picked them up yesterday. So I'm busy putting them all in their little mailing pockets and sending them out. So it's very nice have that done and be sending that out into the world. So once I've dealt with my CD distribution, which is just me, then I'll get it up on iTunes and Spotify and everyone else can have it too. So.
Well, when you see that random address for America, you'll know it's me.
Yeah, great. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I've got just 2 others from the US, a couple of ladies that were tuning into my live meditation mantra sessions all through last year. So they both ordered the CDs, even though the postage cost them like $20, whatever.
Who cares?
So all that information's available on your website, correct?
Yeah. So you can buy the physical copies on underwoodhealing.com. So
look at
everything
the tag below, people. Look at the
everything.
Tag below.
Oh, here's one you prepared earlier. Everyone's there. And if people are interested in joining me in the online events group, you're best to go to my Facebook page. So just search for Katie Underwood and you'll find me. And then you'll find the info on there, or people can just message me and go, "How the fuck do I join?" And I will tell you. So
So we understand you're super busy, so we've gone over time because we just have so much to talk about with you. But thank you so much for your time today. As you can tell, I've been a fan since, you know, Pop Stars days. I don't know if you remember, I've got to just share a little story. On your first tour, you guys came to Newcastle.
Yes.
Which is where I am. And in the middle of the concert, Tiffany threw out her cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Into the audience, and there was so this is just for Jeff, there was actually a physical altercation in the audience to get this cowboy hat. Like they weren't even teenage girls, they would have been late 20s, because I was a teenager and they were like real tall and they were literally punching on to get this cowboy hat, and you guys are like, "We're not continuing with the show until everyone calms down." It was like, it was a Beatles moment. I was just like, this is insane. Because I remember we were outside the venue, lined up around the block to get in to see Bardo. And everyone's like, "Ah, Bardo." I'm like, "Shut up, whatever." But I was like, I will never forget the punch up over Tiffany's cowboy hat.
Only in Newcastle.
Yeah, nearly right. See, we're a bit of a rock and roll city, so we go rock and roll for pop as well. It's just
I saw Katie, I saw you live at Big Gay Day and like, oh gosh, what year was
Brisbane.
It? Yeah,
Brisbane.
Yes. Yeah, I was living in Brisbane at the Wickham Hotel. And
yes.
Who was the other guest that night? Was like Martha Wash, was it?
I don't know.
Or was it like
the Weather Girl? It was one of them.
Oh,
you know, the one who did like CNC Music Factory or something. I remember she was there as well. But I remember watching you because you did Beautiful and you did a few of the other tracks. I was there in glitter and shirtless and
we would have done. So that was when Be Together was happening. And I remember my DJ mate Tim, who was T-Funk, he remembers that day because I quite outrageously wore a white T-shirt and then got it wet and wasn't wearing a bra. So that was like,
That wasn't for everyone.
That was for the girls. And he's like, man, you rocked that wet T-shirt moment so hard. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you got to give a little.
Yes.
I'm a newfound fan. I enjoy you. I think you're fabulous. You are so fun. And I can't wait to check out your website and get in on some of those classes and get your CD. I'm super excited. And I hope you'll come back and join us because you are just, you're a blast, sister.
Well, look, I'm really, 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 really keen to get some dance music out this year. You know, last year really put a creative firecracker up my whatever. I've been on Tim.
Are you confirming it here? Are you confirming it? I'm going to come in and zoom in. Are you confirming that there might be some new pop and dance music from Katie Underwood?
What I'm confirming is that I've recorded 3 tracks with Tim. And now I just have to get him as excited and vibed as I am and get it to the right label and get it released. So at the moment, the last I heard, his mate, John Course, who you may know, who he works with in label land, has sent him some feedback on the tracks. So it's just kind of a watch and wait. But the tracks are there. I've done my bit. I now just need to wait for the people to do their bit. So fingers crossed. People. Watch this space for more dance music from me.
You know, follow Katie on Instagram and, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Katie. We've had a ball.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for being so open.
My face legit hurts from smiling. So thank you for that. My face needs a break. All right, it's been a pleasure. I love you all.
Thank you so much, Katie.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.